Saeed, who is a sexual harassment lawyer who currently runs Rights of Women's free sexual harassment helpline at work, which she founded and set up.
Deeba has also just been nominated as a Future Shaper of 2020 by Marie Claire.
And Deeba is just a genuine badass feminist who constantly supports other women. And we are so, so excited to have Deeba join us today. So thank you.
Hello. That was very nice.
Hello.
I'm so thrilled to be with you guys here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're very pleased to have you and get some of your knowledge and insight into the women's rights space. So I'm going to start with the first question, Deeba. Can you tell us about your journey and what inspired you to pursue a career in advocating for women? I think definitely the audience will be really interested to hear that, and I certainly am as well.
Such a difficult question. I mean, for me, it's deeply personal. Like, all of the things I'm advocating for now, I have experienced them in my life personally, and so that's why my work is so cathartic and powerful to me. It's not just something I fell into, it's something I've been growing into my entire life. And it's, to be honest, it's really a tool for me to heal, to empower people where I wasn't empowered. And I just find it incredibly, I don't know, you know, like, I just feel very lucky that I have figured out what I'm supposed to do on this planet. And once you kind of, I mean, once you kind of figure out what that is, it just makes life incredibly more simple, because I know what I'm supposed to do every day. I know what I care about, and I know what makes sense to me, and how I want things to be different in the future. And it becomes your life, you know, like, you guys are activists, you know, like, it's not a job. It's an everyday, every moment you're pushing for more, for change, for action, for results. You know, it's kind of like how I live my life, really, to be honest.
Wow, that's a really honest and moving story, really, because that must, I mean, it must be really hard for you every day to kind of, or is it actually? Because I think you obviously inspire many people who you know you're brave and you're honest about your journey. So how have you coped? Like, what's kept you going?
I think what's kept me going is, when we talk to the women on the advice line, every conversation is like incredibly powerful. You know, like, you've really got women who are bearing their absolute souls to you, and you know, I don't know their name and they don't know my name, but we're having this beautiful connection in that moment, and I hope that they feel heard and listened to. And as soon as you just have one of those conversations, you're just like, I think when you start recognizing the patterns in the call, and you start hearing the same call over and over again, and you start realizing how these are systematic problems. You know, these aren't, every woman is just experiencing it through her own eyes and through her own situation and through whatever specific vulnerabilities she has. But when you start kind of sensing the pattern and what's going on, and you start understanding the systemic problems and the issues, it's very powerful, because you start realizing, you know, what, how many barriers need to be broken down, how people need to understand what's actually happening, and just how, like, we've got to fight, we have to fight so much nonsense and so much like so many presumptions. I just wish everybody could, like, come and listen to the advice. Not that they can, because obviously it's all confidential, but I think it's obviously, like, shaped who I am a lot.
Didn't you win an award as well with the Law Society? I know that they obviously give pro bono awards out, but it's obviously more than pro bono, because it really is, it's a constant now, and it has, and whilst it is free, it's one of the incredible sources that are available to women to equal out the equality in your place of work.
Oh yeah, like, the fact that this is all pro bono, it is mad. You know, like, this should be stuff that the government is giving people. I think all, you know, like legal aid and all of that is stuff that, you know, the state should be providing. But no, it's just fallen into the charity sector to be, to, you know, to kind of, to help people get access to their legal rights. You know, it shouldn't be that way where you know, if you can't afford legal advice, sorry, you have to go to a charity. But that's the situation we're in. And yeah, you're right. You know, we've been recognised for the work we're doing because it's astounding that it wasn't there before, when the problem is so massive and the demand for our service is so high that you kind of, it kind of, you know, when we first started, I was a bit like, oh, are people going to call us? You know, have we been exaggerating this? And then you kind of get the influx of calls and you realize like, wow, we're not even scratching the surface of what we need to be doing. And we're just a little like tiny charity, a band of female, you know, employment lawyers trying to give this free support, when really the entire system has to change.
No, that's incredible, because it really is that what we do at Women for Wanawake, what we're trying to do is really focus on, because part of it's education, isn't it? And you talk about system change, but it's also like cultural change. There are many men who sit on the top of, like, they're in the corporate boards, they're your manager, they're your boss, and they just don't understand what sexual harassment is, and they may use that as that kind of ignorance as an excuse and as that as protection against not being then held to account for it. And I find that really frustrating, because it's just, I think boys, young boys and girls, need to understand what is sexual harassment.
Yeah, it's massive.
Totally.
Like, I don't mean, you know, sexual harassers don't identify as being sexual harassers, do they? They don't recognize their behavior, or otherwise, why would they do it? That's some of the, I mean, that's some of it. But then I actually do speak to a lot of women who are experiencing abuse from somebody who is quite manipulative, and they are certainly exploiting their position of power. And they obviously get a kick out of it, you know, they get a kick out of being able to do that to somebody who can't fight back, to be able to exert that power and that control. And that's why, you know, that's why sexual harassment is a type of violence against women, which people sort of struggle to understand.
Yeah.
They think, oh, it's just a guy having a crack and just, you know, hitting her, and what's the problem with that? And a bit of a, I think the thing with sexual harassment is there is this constant kind of obsession with the grey area, you know, like sexual harassment is, it's all about interpretation, and it depends on like your attitude and if you want to interpret it as harassment. And I think that's the kind of problem that we're still kind of fighting against, and, you know, banging our head against a brick wall, that, you know, what's the kind of problem? And I think what we see on the advice line, though, is probably, you know, the women aren't calling us about those kind of grey area, you know, things. They're calling us because they have, you know, for example, they've turned down a sexual advance from their manager, and now their manager is punishing them for that. They are, they've removed them from that project, they've taken them out of that meeting, they've you know, they've put them on a redundancy process, they've put them on a performance review. You know, they're really kind of wreaking havoc on their lives because they feel sexually rejected. And that's when you need employment law advice, because you're like, this isn't just me, I've turned down some guy and, you know, he's a bit upset about it. This is somebody who's now trying to ruin my life because of this.
And I think, oh, sorry to interrupt you again, Diva. I think because the internet is a bit laggy. But for me, I think sexual harassment is so normalized in terms of, like, you know what you're saying about perception and what we see as like sexual harassment and what it actually is. I think for me personally, and maybe this is my ignorance, but it's been, I've seen sexual harassment to be quite blatant, so like rape or someone like actually touching you, whatever. But even what people say, which I've discovered now, obviously in the work that we're doing, is it can be so subtle, but it's so normalized. You see it in music videos, you see it, you know, as you said, friends, people say things to you and you're like, oh, well, that's my friend, so that's fine. And but then that's what I think stops people from coming forward. And as Nina was saying in the beginning, you know, as women and girls and boys, we need to be taught from an early age what sexual harassment is across the board. And yeah. It's not an interpretation. It is what it is. You know what I mean? And you shouldn't, just because someone's your friend or your partner, that you should allow such behavior. If it's not welcomed, it shouldn't happen. And I think that's the difference.
I think as well, like, what I would say about it is that there's so much male entitlement, like, that men have the right to be sexual with women, mm-hmm. and they don't appreciate that a woman doesn't want to be sexualized when she's at work. She wants to be a professional. She wants to do her job. She wants to be respected. She doesn't want to be hit on, and she doesn't want to be commented on her appearance. And like, we're really disrespecting a woman when she's doing something professional, mm-hmm. and we're reducing her to a sexual object, you know?
Diva, I've got a question that we actually didn't previously have, but I was like, because I recently had a chat with my family, actually, and my cousins about WAP, you know, the song with Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so we had a debate, and I'm a feminist, and my cousin also is, but our views were very different about the song and what it represented. And we were actually talking about how Russell Brand had weighed in on the debate and had said that the song and the video is not good. And he kind of referred it, or rather compared it to pornography, and was basically saying that these women are talking about female empowerment, but they're using their bodies. And that, yes, that may be empowering for some, but they could basically do more. And I was kind of the view that I think Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B, they're reclaiming their kind of power through their bodies. This is the state that we live in. And they're also businesswomen. I think they do a lot more than just in that video. But I want to know your opinion also, Paris, yours too, about this.
Well, look, Russell Brand is a misogynist. Shut up. So I think that's what it is, isn't it? Like, this, it's this deep rooted misogyny that, like, we need a man to tell us how we should behave,
exactly,
or is respectable. Like, how about shut your face, Russell Brand?
And I completely agree.
What do you think?
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with both of you. I think, how dare these men? Because they sexualize us, but when we want to sexualize ourselves, then it's wrong. It's like, where do you get off saying that? I think men always have an opinion. And you're right, Diva, about misogyny. Anything to kind of put us in our place, say, like, we sexualize you, you don't sexualize yourself, but we use you as a sexual thing. And before he became this kind of woke, quote-unquote, guy, he was treating women disrespectfully and disgustingly, so...
But to your point, like, whether I love that song. Like, I feel great when I sing it. Like, it makes me feel, like, awesome. Like, why should I, you know, like, there's a sort of a greater kind of that song, because there's so much, like, misogyny in music. I was, like, I don't know if you guys follow Lala Let Me Explain on Instagram.
Yeah.
Who is my god. I love her. She was talking about, like, how, you know, loads of music is misogynistic, but we still like to dance and enjoy it and things like that. And that's not a problem, you know, like, that's fine. But a woman, like, puts out a too sexualized song and we're like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, this has to be policed. This has to be questioned. Like, you know, men have been putting out sexualized songs forever. And that was fine. And I don't really sort of have a strong opinion about it. Like, this is something, like, I was gonna talk about later when one of the questions you asked me, but this kind of misogyny that kind of permeates between, like, through culture and through everything. Mm. I was watching, like, have you seen The Holiday? You must have seen The Holiday.
Yes.
I haven't. Oops.
Oh God, that, like, it's so basic, but.
Watch is quite. I quite liked it.
There's so much misogyny in that film, like,
yeah,
it's, and that's like a rom-com, and it's like, there's so much sexism in, like, women are pathetic creatures who need a man to live, and they're crying their eyes out at being rejected, and they're, you know, the only thing a woman wants to head off to a man. And I was kind of just like, I don't know, and I kind of, that film is like 20 years old now, and I was like, this isn't messed up. Like, this is what we're telling women to, the whole film is just really weird, actually.
And the fact that we still watch these kind of films, this is still the films that we're all watching. This is still the films that's on Netflix. It's the most popular films.
And
the
these
Christmas
are like
holidays.
Family films, right? Yeah. These are like, this is what good morals and good values are. This, what a clean cut
It's
film.
Just normalization.
Exactly.
Even as women, we normalize this behavior completely, you know, I know in my culture, African, Kenyan, we have some old-fashioned views. My grandmother would have some very old-fashioned views about how women should be. Mm-hmm. And we carry on and perpetuate this. And there's people even my age who perpetuate this kind of behavior. So, you know, as women, we do have a big part to play in some of the way the behaviors are carried out in terms of like how women are perceived. Because you see some, so I'm sure there's so many women that are like, Cardi B, you know, she's a whore, she's this, how, you know, rather than actually saying, well, she's actually taking this in her own hands and empowering herself. So we do, I find that women can also be quite judgmental. So I think we do need to look at that.
Women, we're very threatened by like,
sexual,
like it's the way that we have to like backlash says everything, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And so this comes on nicely to the next question about I may destroy you. I mean, she really took a spin on sexualization, rape, abuse, racism, everything. So I mean, me and Nina absolutely loved it. I mean, just every week we'd talk about it. We'd be like, oh my god, can you believe this, can you believe that, like, you know, especially about the whole rape situation and consent, which is something that really surprised me because it's not something that I knew and understood. Again, this is about education. And so it would be really good to get your view on how she represented sexual harassment, because it was quite shocking and very in your face, which is what I think we needed to see. What's your opinion on that?
I just thought that was the most masterful piece of genius TV mm-hmm. that there has mm-hmm. been in the last 20 years. I was on the floor, like emotionally, professionally, like everything. I was like, where has this been? What, this is like the most important TV show there has been for a really long time. What did I think about the depiction? Like so true, so realistic. Oh God, the way she covers everything. I can't stop I'm gushing about it. But like, I was texting everyone I know, just being like, this is it. This is what everybody needs to see. And what did I think? I thought particularly like the rape, the thing about the, you know, the guy taking off the condom, like the rape.
Yeah.
A series of stories on my Instagram about it. And like, how people just had no idea that was rape and they wouldn't associate that as rape. But so many women had, like, I asked if the women had ever experienced this before, and it broke my heart how many women had said, yes, a guy had done this to her. Like, it's shocking that we don't talk about this stuff more, because there will be, you know, all of those women probably have never told anyone, or they've, you know, told very few people about it. And there isn't really a safe space where we can all just kind of be like, yes, this happened to me too. And literally me too. And And she, you know, Michaela Cold, like, she literally created that space where people could talk about this. And I think there was a really kind of healing experience for a lot of women to kind of just acknowledge, like, yes, this happened to me and it was deeply fucked up. A journalist that is really supportive of our work, Sophie Wilkinson, she wrote this really good piece on this. Go on her Instagram and read it. Like, it was incredible that they're just like, this has been happening for a long time, and I just can't believe that it wasn't discussed. And this goes back to education, because a lot of guys think taking a condom off in the middle of sex isn't rape. Like, and where do they get these ideas from? Like, they need to be, do they really need to be sat down and told it? Like, I guess they do. We're doing that education. It needs to be like, oh, by the way, you know, you know, like, there's a certain amount of like trust and consent when you're having sex with someone.
Yeah.
And the violation of that, if you do this, it has to be explained, I guess. And it's It's shocking, but I guess.
I think a lot of abuse happens in relationships, doesn't it? And people, because you assume, again, this is my boyfriend, so therefore, or my husband, so therefore it's not rape.
Exactly.
And that's what we're seeing now. There's a lot of domestic violence now. So I think it's also explaining, even in a relationship, whether you've been together 20 years or 5 minutes, it's still, you can't be doing those things without consent.
And that's why the show is so genius, because she just touches on all of those issues, you know, like when it happens to her, she's kind of, you know, she doesn't know the guy very well. And then she goes on to carry on dating him. It's so clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's such a clever show, because she's touching on all these kind of social taboos and these myths around what rape is, and, you know, oh, you wouldn't date someone that's raped you, and you wouldn't, you know, like, oh, I just, oh, I can't, like,
also,
give her...
Also, the fact that, she was essentially, like, she was date raped and she blacked out, and that kind of, the way she kind of created this whole character development and the flashbacks as well, I found that so, and I'm sure you both did as well, like, just so, so emotional, because I've got friends who've had similar things happen to them, and it must have been very, very hard to watch for people who have had very similar things happen to them. Yeah. And I feel like Michaela Cole, what she does so well is it's nice to know, not nice, but it's good to know that this can be told, and that you have shared experiences with other women, and that these things are being broken down and they're being addressed. I think Diva, you said before that you're telling all your friends and stuff to watch it. And so was I was just saying, like, just everyone's got to watch it. Brothers, boyfriends, yeah. Like, especially the men in your life, because for 1 week, of course, we've got to do some unlearning as well, but a lot of men have lots and lots of unlearning to do. Like, it was just, I felt like I was watching an actual sexual education, like, lesson, which I've, like, never had in my life. I feel like we still get taught just how to put a condom on a banana, and apparently still being taught in UK schools today. There was a podcast with, it's like adulting podcast, but there was this young activist called Maxine. She's called Looking for Mother Max on Instagram. And she said that, this is still happening. She's 18. And I thought we had a lot of faith in, like, the younger generation, but the fact that this is still happening, it just shows that, like, that's why it's so important, Diva, like, the work that you do, it's just so important that this is going on, because...
It's crazy, like, it's like consent, the fundamental basis of sex is not acknowledged in sex education, and like in a world where violence against women is endemic, you know, and we still haven't made the link of, like, there is a fundamental misunderstanding of consent. It's it's mind-boggling, isn't it?
And so, Diva, we have another question for you. So, as you know, this is obviously about still sexual harassment, but maybe going one step further. I'm sorry if this is triggering for anyone, but we're going to leave some helpful resources at the end of the podcast in the show notes. But because obviously we know the government have been very misleading on what the F is going on right now. So, like, allowing kind of families to make plans for Christmas, telling us obviously we're in tier two. And of course we are in tier four now because there is a mutation of this virus. But I think it's just more about the inconsistency and, like, lack of foresight. But how would you say that now that we are in tier four, which is basically a lockdown, how would you say, from the work that you do and insight you have into this, how will this impact vulnerable women who are potentially living with partners, you know, like the rise in domestic violence? Do you have anything that you have, like, words of advice or any views around this that you know from kind of an insider perspective, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, like, this is now the third lockdown, and the government still hasn't made specific provision for this. You know, like, we saw it immediately in the first lockdown, the rise in violence against women. It was instant, and they still haven't made proper provision for entering another lockdown and giving domestic abuse services more support. Because, you know, domestic abuse, like, Christmas is their busy time anyway, and now we're in tier four. Like, it's just mad to me that this, I mean, it just goes to show, like, it's not seen as a fundamental part of a functioning society and economy, that you respected and understood the issue, which is a matter of life and death, by the way. you know, a matter of life and death, then you would
totally
this the urgency that it is. It is as fundamental as healthcare is. We are talking about women dying. So, you know, what does it say? I mean, I am so exasperated with this mismanagement and embarrassing lack of, you know, foresight and frankly just irresponsibility of this government. You got me, like, you could get me ranting about this for ages, but like, there was no provision made. Again, they must have decided, like, they just decided, right, we're going to do this. Well, if you're going to do this, then you need to understand what the repercussion is. And the repercussion is there is going to be more women who are going to need access to emergency services. So you, as much as you give, you know, the NHS and things more resources, then you must do the exact same thing to this, because this is the consequence of going into a lockdown. There will be women who are cut off from access and support. So what are you going to do about it? They've done nothing. So there you go.
Yeah.
No, thank you. That really answered the question. I just wanted to, like, kind of shine light on that.
Really angry.
You know, yeah. But we need to shine light on the fact that there's going to be women locked away with abusive partners right now. And we do need to raise awareness mm-hmm. about that and empower or let women know that there are, like, services out there. Like what you're doing, Diva, with the sexual harassment helpline. There are equivalents to that, but in the home.
It's like with those services, they are just like at max. They're at max capacity. Like, you can call them. They might not pick up because they're at max capacity. Like, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I think the government's just had this attitude of, like, just call the helpline, and anyone working in the sector is like, we're on our knees, like, we could barely keep up before, and now you want to just give us more. We're like, ugh. Anyway.
So I actually wrote to my local MP last week on a number of issues, and one of the things I asked him was about domestic violence and domestic abuse and what my local council are doing to help women who are going through this and men. And so he responded back to me saying, on domestic abuse is an appalling crime, and anyone who endures it needs our support and protection. That is why I hope you are reassured to know that the government continues to support domestic abuse charities during this difficult year. Mm-hmm. And in November, we announced 11 million in funding for rape and domestic abuse support charities, and 7 million for innovative programs to stop domestic abuse happening in the first place. We are passing the domestic abuse bill through Parliament at the moment, and this will help us to tackle domestic abuse more effectively and protect those who are victims. So in practice, we're not really seeing it, they're just funneling money into what?
Okay,
so he wasn't able to give me a clear.
First of all, that money is not all going to domestic abuse work. Okay, that's just like a lump sum.
Yep.
The reality is only a fraction of that money is actually going into domestic abuse services. Oh, so by the way, £11 million is a drop in the ocean. So mm-hmm. you know. And then what I would say, this, I mean, a lot of people don't know about this, but the government has. Well, the government has what is known as a violence against women strategy, okay? And now with everything that's happening, all this kind of attention on domestic abuse and the domestic abuse bill, what they want to kind of do is remove domestic abuse from their violence against women strategy and turn it into its own domestic abuse strategy. And what they want to do, the kind of purpose behind that, is to degender domestic abuse, because they want to talk about abuse happening to men, and they kind of want to roll back on the idea that, you know, that women's organizations have been fighting for domestic abuse to be recognized as a gender-based violence issue. They want to remove it out of the violence against women strategy and have its own strategy, which is a disaster. It will completely roll back all the work that's been done to make people recognize why women are so specifically vulnerable to domestic abuse of some kind of culture war which doesn't recognize domestic abuse against men enough.
It's really worrying. It is turning into a culture war, and it's more about politics rather than actually people's lives at the moment. That's how I see it anyway.
Yeah, completely.
It's completely ideological, gender-based, is mad, but they're pushing it so much. Trust's comments were really interesting. Well, they were ridiculous, but they were really interesting in the sense that she was saying that like Black Lives Matter was like fashionable and all of this stuff. Whereas anybody working in the sector knows fully. Anyone working inequalities and indiscrimination or harassment or violence will tell you that all of these issues are intersectional. They all play into each other. And that's not being recognised enough, and the idea that the government kind of want to separate these things out goes against all the data and the evidence and the I don't know what to do, Nina. I don't know what to do. What can you say apart from be on the front line and say this isn't how it is, but it's an ideological thing that they want to pursue this. It's all.
Yeah,
how they interpret the world. And
but for me, my issue is, even with this answer that I got, which I'm not impressed by from the MP, it's like that doesn't tell me anything. Like, yeah, so you've got 11 million, so what are you going to do with that? So I feel like they need to be actually speaking to people like yourself, people who are actually doing this work frontline, and get tangible solutions rather than just saying we've got this money to do this. I feel like that's what's missing, because this is why we're still so behind in terms of what the government are doing, not Work Like Yourself and other charities that are helping women. I think it's just a lack of coalition with charities who are actually on the front line. I think this is the biggest problem for me personally. They just don't have a clue, basically.
Yeah, the government does talk to the sector. I mean, the government, there is communication, but they just don't. They don't listen. Like, they don't.
No.
And
that's why we are.
Is just like, and it's like, yes, you've been given your opportunity to speak, but it doesn't mean we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Like.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, so on the next question, which is another big one. So sorry, Deba. So how big of an impact would you say the Me Too movement has made to responding to sexual harassment against women, and what's your opinion on the backlash that is received? Because obviously the Me Too movement is a very important and powerful movement, but it has received a lot of backlash from many, many people, including some women. So what's your opinion on that?
People ask me this a lot, actually, this question. I think like the main thing, I could say like my kind of usual answer, but I want to just sort of explain something a bit different, I guess, in this time. It's just like the sexual harassment work I do now has had its roots, from the 80s. The idea that, like, I'm not saying you guys think this, but I think some people think this, that, oh, sexual harassment's like new and suddenly an issue. Whereas like papers were being published on this in the 80s, there were a whole body of academic work was done. New laws, all the laws we have about sexual harassment come from that time. And then, so there was all this flurry of activity, and it kind of looked like for a moment things were going to change. And then it kind of just, I don't know, I don't want to say that it fell into the background, because when I look at it, even when I was growing up, all of these things about sexual harassment were still happening, but they were being interpreted in that kind of normalized lens that we've already talked about. Like, when I think about it, like when I was a kid and Bill Clinton was like impeached for getting a blowjob from his intern, and like all of these stories were happening, but they were just kind of like being interpreted in this lens of like men will be men. Boys will be boys. What else can you expect men to be doing? Like, sex scandals are normal, and men abusing positions of power, well, men have always done that. So that's what I kind of realized when I was doing this work, and I look back and I think, look, there have been so many significant moments which the media just haven't interpreted their significance. Because, when you think about it, like the president of the United States had been He'd been actually sued like by a previous employee for sexual harassment. So these things have always had a really actually like high profile, or, you know, if you've ever watched like Anita Hill give that really powerful testimony to the US Senate about Clarence Thomas when he was a nominee to be a Supreme Court justice, and she talked about sexual harassment and it was explosive, you know. And her story, by comparison to what I hear on the advice line, it was, you know, I've heard much, much worse things happening to women 30 years on. And you kind of realize how far we still have to go, but just kind of, I'm very humble about where all of this work has started, and there have been so many trailblazers before who, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of giants in that sense. I think it's really important to acknowledge that before everything that happened before the Me Too movement, the hashtag Me Too movement, the Tarana Burke Me Too movement, like all of that stuff, there was such a accumulation of work and stuff that happened before that moment happened.
I think it's really good you mentioned that, Deba, because I think we often lose sight. I know I do. I think oh, this is all so interesting, like, wow, what's happening now? But there were women before us, as you said, and women who are still alive today who have been doing this for years and years and years, and the concepts are there. And I think it's really important to recognize those concepts came from, and to so I think it's just really important that you said that.
Yeah, I think it's problematic to kind of think of Me Too as new. Actually, the more I kind of learn about it, the more I kind of educate myself, I'm like, this is the problem, though. If we kind of act like this is new and interesting, there is nothing new and interesting about sexual violence. There is nothing new and interesting about violence against women. And that's how we need to see it, like a persistent problem that remains and has always been there. And yes, there is all this interest around it, but when and you can compare it to the Black Lives Matter, suddenly there's everyone's interested in racial discrimination and inequality.
Yeah.
That's always been there, like, yeah. You know, and that's fine, and that's good, and, you know, those cultural moments are really important. But if it becomes this kind of, you know, these moments have to turn into something, you know, you have to see the systemic change. You know, you look at the civil rights movement, and like, what did they achieve? They achieved actual legislative change, and that's how change actually happens. You know, you can't just have a cultural movement, you need to have underlying things change. And right now, Me Too,
yeah, was actually, and as such,
all the laws are the same, every law is the same. It maybe in some countries there's been a bit of progress, but we're still in the same system. Women come forward and maybe they feel more encouraged to report, but they're still, when they report, they still enter a terrible legal system. I don't want to say terrible, but they enter a system rigged against them. And until that changes, well, then just Me Too is a hashtag.
And I was actually going to, I'm glad you brought the example about the Black Lives Matter movement this year, because, yeah, all of a sudden we've seen this like huge wave and everybody's like, you know, fighting for racial inequality, which is very important. But I remember thinking and talking to some of my friends, like, why did George Floyd's murder really upset everyone, including myself as a Black woman? I was like, oh my God. So there is something, you're right, about this culture, like, because when the Me Too movement came up, like, there was just loads of people coming out. Everyone's like, Me Too, Me Too, Me Too. But it seems like it's kind of gone quiet. I don't know whether maybe I'm not seeing it. I don't know. But it is, I think you're very right to say system change is so important, because otherwise, yeah, it's just us talking about things, you know, at the pub or something, but not actually,
yeah,
you know, going forward. And that's not a criticism, but I think we need to really be, as you're saying, like, really push for it. And stuff like even writing to your local MP, these things, I think people just don't really realise just how important that kind of stuff is. You know, campaigning, you know, calling charities, speaking to them, finding out like what's happening, how can I help, you know, reading, educating, telling your friends about things, like doing things in the office, in the workplace, standing up for people, these small things, because that is still a system change, right?
Yeah, and activism has a huge part to play as well, because like, look at you guys, you're doing this podcast, you're caring about these issues, you're talking about them, you're making this your life and the way that you view the world. And I think that's really important as well, that we all have our part to play in just caring about these issues and championing those issues. And yeah, I think, you know, that's important, that every person can, in their own way, create some change just in their own lives. And I think if more people did that, we would be in a better place.
I'd agree, Deba. Wise words. but also, yeah, I think what Paris is saying as well about all those kind of just giving examples of individual things that we can do. In my previous work, I was quite inspired by the woman that I was working with. I was working at a council actually as a policy officer, and the whole council changed their whole agenda on equalities after the Black Lives Matter movement, and they pushed Black Lives Matter to the top of the equalities agenda, and now it's got its own committee. And they often have meetings with the corporate body, and they're holding this specific committee have now got actual people working on the Black Lives Matter agenda. So I think that is the kind of like intricate change that I think needs to happen from like local authority, government level. That really need, they need proper like system change. I would say, and then just obviously individual change is really important, but until we have like senior people in senior levels making the decisions, recognize that they need to do a lot of unlearning and potentially, you know, do some actual, like, there's kind of often people talk about like actually learning about racial equality and then unlearning those like small microaggressions that often managers do accidentally, quote unquote accidentally. Obviously that's not accidentally, that's the kind of patriarchal white supremacist kind of world that we are living in right now, but that needs to be broken down. So I think it is happening, but I think yeah, Paris, I would agree with you in the sense that I feel like online it's kind of settled a bit, and then how then do we kind of reignite that? Is it What would you say, both of you, like how do we reignite the flame? We don't need another person to die, or there's people dying still, but shouldn't take another Black life dying for then that to be reignited. It's really tough.
I don't know, it depends if you see success as like a flurry of activity online or not. I think, you know, that it's impossible to kind of, the way that we have rolling news and the way that we're like constantly on to the next thing just means that like you're probably not going to have like coverage non-stop. I think that's the kind of nature of the world we're in, that we kind of pick up issues and we drop them and we get excited about things and then we get bored of them. And I think that's fine, and that's probably the way things are going to be. But I don't think certainly the issue of Me Too for me hasn't stopped, because we are now delivering this service. We are delivering a service that just didn't exist before. And every time a woman calls us, we're making a change. We're making one less woman feel less alone and more empowered. And my dream would be for the advice line to be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so there would be enough provision for every single woman who needs it, and they can come straight to us for free. You know, you can come for, you know, for free legal advice. Like, it's amazing. Legal advice is difficult to get, it's expensive. We are there. So for me, when I look at that, that is huge. That's enormous, that there's a service. Like, there was, you know, women are always messaging me and saying, I wish this had happened, you know, I wish you had been there a few years ago when I was going through this. And now we can be like, look, we can be here for you when it is happening. And that is just like, you know, that's just fighting fires, really. That's just fighting. That's not, it's giving a frontline support service, which is vital for helping the people who are actually in that situation. But we have, you know, we are doing work on changing policy and changing legislation so that we're getting to the root causes of all of these issues. And I am forever grateful for the Me Too movement, because had that not happened, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And I know how important what we're doing is every single day. So in terms, you know, as to the backlash, well, that is the patriarchy. That is the patriarchy that we are fighting every day, and we continue to fight it. And you know, just and looking at, as well as, you know, the sort of everything that happened this summer with the Black Lives Matter movement, like my dream would be to kind of make people understand how these two issues are together. Like Black women are they're more vulnerable to sexual harassment. Like that's what people need to understand. Women of color are hypersexualized. And it's wrong that we're kind of separating these movements. We need to understand them all together, and I think society hasn't quite clicked onto that yet.
Yeah, I think it's people understanding their privilege. So whether it's a man to understand the privilege that they have over women in the society that we currently live in, and then white people understanding their privilege against black people in the current society we live in. Obviously, they're not more privileged, neither of these groups to the other,
Yeah,
and
that's
actually doing something about it. So if I was a man and I saw, you know, a woman being treated badly at work, to say something, you know. Or if, you know, you have racist family, you know, talk to them and say, you know, you're actually like ridiculous, or you know, do something. Like, but I feel people feel so disillusioned about it because it's a lot of hard work. I mean, even with this Women for Wanawake work we're doing, it's really hard, and it can get you down because things are so bad, but you just have to keep pushing and understanding your privilege. Like, we all have privilege, whether financially, you know, how you look, where you work, whatever. So it's just understanding that we all are in a position of privilege, and we can help somebody who's beneath us in terms of in the society that we live in. I'm not saying that that's a fact, but obviously if someone's hungry and you have food, you can give someone food, right? And that's understanding that you have privilege against somebody. But I think people just don't understand it, and they don't want to go far enough. And I feel, you know, I'm not having a go at people, but you just have to. I mean, this is, we can't live in a world where people don't have, and we have. Or people are being marginalized and killed as we speak. I mean, how many women all over the world have probably died while we're speaking on this podcast from domestic violence?
Yeah. Oh,
And nobody has done anything. Like, people just don't want to deal with it. And it's, you know, we really have to be brave.
yeah. And what that reminded me of, what you were just saying there, so powerful. What it reminded me of, when I was marching in the Black Lives Matter march this summer, I turned around and there were so many white people like marching. There was so many white people.
Loads, loads, yeah.
And when I think about the Me Too, when I go to a women's march, I don't see men walking with us. I don't, where, when,
That's a good point, actually.
you know, there aren't men taking banners and going, women's rights, we want them, it's not fair. You know, like, and that's the issue, isn't it? Like, women's rights are still our problem. Whereas people in the black, like, I think what was really significant about the marches this summer was it was a lot of white people who were like, no, we're done with the racial inequality.
Exactly, yeah,
And
and it was beautiful.
yeah, that's kind of when the
It
game felt like it was changing, right? Like, well, whoa, this is different. White people.
Yeah,
I think it's
exactly, and it's
also
because they've understood.
generational as well. I think, like, so like me, then speaking to my mum about what microaggressions are after like doing a lot of research online, and also having worked for a council, like understanding what those are from people that have experienced them, colleagues, and then explaining to my family what those are, and them not actually computing or understanding that of what it means. So I think you were both saying before, like, how important it is to just not be afraid of having those conversations. Yes, we're going to get things wrong, but we all get things wrong, but we all have empathy within us. I do believe strongly that all people have the ability to empathize. It's just sometimes that's locked away for longer for others because more things get in the way. But really, I think we need to like delve back into that kind of understanding of empathy. And also just, I think, because like with me in Paris, like the reason why we started our organization was because we want to make it intersectional, and to join both of our cultures together, both different perspectives, but also recognizing each other's privileges, especially myself, and kind of what you can, how you can help each other, how can you can platform each other. And also I do believe that more white women especially need to step aside and know when to say, when to kind of just
understand that it's not your place maybe to say, to talk about something, whereas someone else's best place to talk about that. And that can be really, really hard to do. And I know I'm probably, maybe not even doing it right now by talking over you both potentially, but like, it's something that is a challenge. But this, I think the Black Lives Matter movement has brought that again to the, to shone a light on it. And I feel quite positive in the direction that we're going in, hopefully.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, in terms of women's rights, if, you know, we need, so the men that we know who are like, they support us, blah, 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 you know, the managers, we need to be like, you need to hire more women. You know, we also in the workplace. So as much as we say we need to hire more Black people and have them in positions of power, we need to be saying, well, why are there not many women making decisions? Because then how are we going to ever make change if we're never there? So I think it's actually, So I think it's good what you've both said. And I think it's really poignant what you said about, yeah, we don't see men on our marches, but I know so many men who are like so pro women. So where are they? In fact, next time I'm going to call them and ask them to come.
Come to the fucking march.
Like, yeah. So
you were willing to do that for Black Lives Matter. You care about equality, like, understand
the same thing.
Don't just assume, because this is the thing, people assume that women, it can't change. They think they're wedded to an idea of, like, you know, you I think people really do have this kind of, it depends on how you view the world. I think some people really do believe that you're never going to stop harassment, and you're never going to stop rape, and you're never going to stop these things, because they are human nature. Men are going to want to do that to women, and you can control it a little bit and kind of acknowledge that it should be less, but you can't imagine a world where that's gone. And if you kind of subscribe to that worldview, then you feel like what women are doing, so I feel like this is the backlash to the work I'm doing, which is that some people are just like, well, harassment is kind of inevitable. You're never going to, this is the same with street harassment and public sexual harassment as well, like, people feel like it's futile because
ridiculous.
And that's the kind of issue, that's what we need to persuade people of, like, we're offering a world that can happen, if you want it to happen, you know, if you believe it doesn't have to be this way, then come join us. But I think lots of people don't, because I mean, I think about my own work, and I just think, well, lots of people have said to me, well, you're never going to stop women. You're never going to stop men hitting on women. Like, that's the natural order. And if you want to fight that, then you want to disturb the natural order of the planet, you know?
That's so you're angry. Changing the world though, Diva, because that's what it is. That's what it's about. It's about literally but using your time to make change. And that's exactly what you're doing with the helpline. Like, when you created this helpline, I had no idea that there wasn't already one. I knew that there was legal aid cut, but I thought there must be some kind of like government scheme, something in line for someone to call up if they've been specifically sexually harassed. So the fact that that didn't even exist, you know, then now Shocking. It is, now it does. So you've already changed, you've already created a system change that hopefully more, then people can follow suit. And that's what's very exciting, is that there is so much to do, and it is being done, as we can see, as it is being done right now.
Yeah, but you know what? There should be a racial inequality helpline.
There should be, actually.
There isn't. There's nothing. We have women calling us saying, I've been discriminated against because I'm Black, or because I'm a person of colour, and there's just nowhere to go. And maybe some of it was sexualized, but maybe a lot of it was racially motivated. And there's still no helpline for that. You know, so
because the trade unions, because it was the trade unions previously that you would go to something like that, but a lot of people aren't part of the trade union, right? So it's quite like, it's also political territory that isn't really told about enough. Like, I didn't know the GMB or these different unions existed until my dad was part of it, but I mean, they're not spoken about. So I think if there was a racial equality helpline, how would that be then linked to, would it be a similar format that you have, Deba? Would it be kind of like...
There should be free legal advice for all harassment and discrimination. Like, we are doing a specific type of harassment, which is sexual harassment, but our work often crosses into racial discrimination and racial harassment and disability and sexuality, all of these things interplay with each other. But I think a lot of people don't recognise that. When they hear sexual harassment, they think it has to be... it has to be obviously sexual is the assumption, right? But so many women who are, maybe they're a person of color or they are have a disability, are experiencing this kind of microaggressions or whatever that in the workplace against them, that is just, again, so normalized, and they're just kind of, they wouldn't recognize that I'm being harassed or I'm being discriminated against. And I think that that is a significant, you know, thing that needs to be achieved out of the Black Lives Matter like movement, that there has to be free legal advice to people who are experiencing racial discrimination. But the whole point of Rights of Women, the charity was set up in the 70s to give women equality. And it was work, you know, we worked out, right, if women are going to have equality, they're going to need to have access to legal advice. They're going to need to be able to enforce and assert their legal rights. And so many women can't do that for various reasons. Let's provide a service where they can, which was, you know, how Rights of Women was born, straight out of the women's liberation movement, right? And we're in exactly the same situation. If we're going to get rid of racial discrimination, you know, racially motivated murder, all of this stuff, where is the provision to help people actually in that situation?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. So hopefully a listener will be inspired, or will be inspired to do something like that. Yeah, exactly.
How do we exactly do this?
I think we need to, I think that's a really interesting and very, I'm even now like thinking, oh my God, yeah, that's true. Because I've had racial discrimination at work, and I continue to every single day. Who do I tell? Other than my family, when I complain to them and stuff, and you know, I don't have anyone to call. And because it's so nuanced, because I'm a woman as well, so sometimes it's like, am I being discriminated because I'm black or I'm a woman? What's worse, that I'm a woman or I'm black? Sometimes it varies depending on the person. But yeah, I think
you're right, and that it's the same thing, isn't it? It's the same thing with sexual harassment. The reason there was no advice line is because, yes, women would be sexually harassed, but they would just say, well, I can't do anything about it. Obviously, it's expected I'm going to just take this. And it's the same with racial discrimination and harassment. It's like, obviously, this is wrong, but I'm not going to sue my employer over it. You know, that's mad. And that's the same situation we were within in sexual harassment. And now we're like, saying no, like here are the tools you need to get justice, and we need the exact same thing for people who are experiencing racial discrimination as well. Like, somebody needs to be providing the actual tools to hold those people to account and say, this, I'm not normalizing this. This isn't just my perception of the world and how I should experience the world. I'm you know. And that's the issue. I mean, so many women don't want to access legal advice because there's so many barriers. You know, let's say they don't speak English as a first language. They're worried about their immigration status. They don't have access to, they might have no recourse to public funds. So doing a process like this, like the service I run, which is completely optional, nobody's forcing you to do this. Nobody forces you to sue your employer. So all these women who come to us are doing it optionally. But that takes a certain level of privilege. To sue your employer requires you to have financial stability, to be able to risk losing that fight. Not everybody has that. So that's the whole problem with the work I'm doing as well. I mean, I think there's just if you've been sexually harassed in the workplace, no one is going to do anything about it unless you do. You know, like, it now falls to you to hold that person responsible, to hold that employer responsible. And a lot of people just don't have the time or the energy to do that. They've got to pay their bills and they've got to just keep on going. So they just absorb it and they move on. And that becomes their experience of the world.
But Deeba, I think it's so powerful that it is there, because I think it's a bit like how it's so important that a woman has the option to either look after her child or have daycare for her child. Like, a woman has the option to just have a baby and still be really successful or not. It's almost like you have, if you didn't want to, it's to press charges or sue your employer. It's so important that person does have the option to do so. And I think you give people that option in many ways by giving free legal advice, because we know that the whole, like, what is it, kind of, there's barely any, like, there still is pro bono, but there's no more but yeah, so like, now legal aid is being cut. It's just so important that there is free stuff out there and that it is possible to get that help initially. I really feel like the law exists to give power to people, because it kind of balances a very unbalanced employment contract already. You're already less powerful than your employer. I think what laws and rights do is they give you more power. You can invoke them, you can use them.
But they mean, laws, rights mean nothing if you can't enforce them. If you can't, literally cannot pay to enact your right, then that right is just a piece of, like, it's just some words on a piece of paper. Because if it comes down to it and you have to pay for it yourself and you don't have the money, then, you know, that's all great on paper, but what can I actually do about it? And then, you know, this is the other thing in my work. You've got 3 months to bring a harassment and discrimination claim. Do you know how quickly that goes?
Wow, that's, yeah. Nothing. God, that's crazy.
You blink and it's over. Yeah. And then women come to us and it's been 6 months and I have to tell them, well, look, you might struggle to make a legal claim because there's just this really arbitrary time limit. And there you go. That's your rights in the bin.
Cough, cough. Anyone listening, start a petition on this to make that time longer, please.
Petition. I can. That's what I'll give you. I'll give you the petition we're doing on it. It's something Rights of Women are campaigning on. But yeah,
perfect. Is there already existing petition on that, Deeba?
Yeah. I'll send it to you guys.
Thank you so much.
But this is not just sexual harassment. This is racial discrimination. Like, it's all the same law. So let's say you are racially discriminated in the workplace. You've got 3 months, basically, to get your skates on. I mean, get legal advice on that. That's very general. But it kind of kills me that's kind of such an arbitrary kind of...
time to...
will just kind of block you from having justice. I mean, it's not right. It's not fair.
And the police as well. I feel like they really don't treat women, which is something that was highlighted in I May Destroy You, about when you go to the police about a case like rape or harassment, and they're just like, well, you know, you're going to have to come to the police station. You're going to have to see this person. You're going to have, you know, how long were you dating them? Like, really, rather than just taking what you say as, why would somebody go there and say that? I know people do, but I just feel like they judge you instantly, and that stops people from going. And then they say, you know, you've got a couple of weeks, I think, to put your case forward, and they just make it really hard for you. And I know this from personal experience, and it's awful. And so, you know, you just decide, as you said, just not to even bother, because no one believes you, no one's listening to you. And you're made to feel like you've done something wrong because you're being harassed.
No, sorry, I'm really excited at what you were saying.
go ahead.
Oh dear. Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, that's a huge part of the problem. Like, women, like I always say, like, it is extraordinary, like, when a woman has the fortitude and the mental stamina to go through the legal process that is heavily rigged against them, heavily rigged against them. They're every point, those women who actually pursue rape cases and actually do it with all the odds stacked against them on, in terms of like conviction rates and the likelihood that this person is ever going to actually be held to account for what he's done, and they still do it because they have faith in the system. They believe it's the right thing to do. They believe in truth and justice. Like, it blows my mind that they still have they still have faith in the system somewhere, that like the truth will be heard. And I just think that's extraordinary. And the way that we still kind of approach those women, like as we react to them as if they're liars, is deeply insulting to what has happened to them. Just on a sort of personal dignity level, it is deeply insulting to what that person has gone through, to not even believe it.
That is, thank you so much for kind of shining light on that. It's like, so much to be done. There is so much to be done, but I think it's important for women to feel that there is a chance, because if there is no chance, but we know there's a chance because it does happen, and there is precedent set, so cases can set a whole new rule and can help all the other women after them. So it's really important to have faith, but also change the system, definitely. So I've got another question for you, Deba. As a Labour activist, which I know you are, you're very politically engaged in the Labour Party and have been for some time. I also know that you've also kind of run for different positions, Labour Party too, which is incredible. So I have quite like an interesting kind of like anomaly. Why when we have, because I'm also a Labour Party member, that's beside the point, but why when we have at least 50% of Labour MPs are women, why is it that we still haven't had a female or woman Labour leader or Prime Minister, but yet we have had two Conservative Party Prime Ministers?
I want to flip this question on its head.
Please do.
Because we could talk about this and we could say all the really obvious stuff, but there is, because you guys know, you already know the answer to this question. But let's talk about how politics actually works, because I am a Labour activist for my sins. I've given the Labour Party a decade of my life, and what I have seen in every echelon of the Labour Party is, and this is not just the Labour Party, this is politics in general, but I think the Labour Party has a problem with this, is misogyny at every single level. And that is partly to do with society and our views and our expectations of women and how we feel about politically active women and opinionated women. But what I saw when I was younger and I entered like political life, you know, I wanted to learn about the Labour Party. I thought the Labour Party is the vehicle for enacting change. Politics is the way you get things done, and if you want an equal society, which I've always wanted, a deeply held belief I've had, then political change is fundamental, and political change is the vehicle to get that done. So I knew it was important to understand the Labour Party and see it. And I went right to the belly of the Labour Party and I rocked up and I said, I want to work for an MP. I want to understand politics. And what I saw working as a parliamentary researcher was how the Labour Party is run by men. The Labour Party is run by nerdy, white, middle class men, and it's not just the people who are elected, but all of that internal machinery needs to change, because that machinery and the way it's operated has, you know, a huge effect on what is seen as politically viable, what is seen as politically strategic, politically valuable. And until we have those internal mechanisms, we kind of get rid of the male bias in all of that, then we're not going to see, when women come forward, we're not going to see them as viable leaders. We're not going to see them as future prime ministers, because if you have a back room of nerdy white men saying, no, we need to have a nerdy white man, that's the only thing that is seen as proper and legitimate, then things are never going to change. And that's why I am passionate about women getting involved in politics and learning how politics works and being inside that internal party machinery, seeing it for what it is, understanding it, so that they are able to feel like they are in a position to govern, because women need to understand all that stuff to feel in that position. And men assume that they have the authority on that, that they have the ability to lead, to understand politics. And we need more women kind of having that mentality as well, because so many MPs, you know, have worked in parliament or in politics before they were in politics, before they got elected. And that was obviously really valuable for them, a valuable experience for them becoming elected. And we need more women to be in that position too. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's I agree with you. I think we need more women putting themselves up and actually be in the positions of power, be making the decisions, be the ones voting on the domestic abuse bill, be the ones voting on the equality legislation, and not, because but then do you think you could...
putting together Labour Party policy, that's what I want to see. I want to see women putting together Labour Party policy, because then the Labour Party will, if more women are kind of in the back room saying, no, this is what we need to talk about, this is what you need to be on the news talking about, saying that to Keir Starmer, saying that to the front bench, then you're going to see change in the Labour Party.
Are you seeing that change at all, Diva? Because obviously I know you've been an activist for quite a while in the Labour Party. If you could expand upon if there has been change, or are you more optimistic or pessimistic?
What I saw when I was working in the shadow cabinet nearly 10 years ago, lots of men did all the political strategizing, men did all the policy decision making, men did all of that. And from what I hear with my friends who are still who are active in the Labour Party and active in the leader's office and all of that, they're saying nothing's changed. It's still men have all the power and control in the decision making. And I think, you know, we have, the Labour Party has this rule now, this kind of rule that we would, a shadow cabinet must be gender balanced. But look, what I'm saying is we need to have that in the back room too. Gender balance needs to be, all political advisors, it should be gender balanced. Because that's all the Labour Party as well. It shouldn't just be this public we've got gender balance, so therefore, you know, tick, we've done feminism. You haven't done feminism if really who has all the power and control? Well,
completely.
You know, really what you're saying is, you know, women are there to be decorative or kind of the illusion of being equal, but really who's making all the decisions?
Completely, absolutely. A tangible, a meaningful position that will facilitate change, right? Systematic change.
When I was working in politics, women did in politics was they did diary management, they did events, they did comms, but they did not do politics, they did not do policy.
Yeah.
And I remember getting there being like, what the hell is this? Like, I came here to do politics and policy. I thought that's what politics was. And then you just sort of kind of come to realize, no, like there are gendered expectations of what women and men can contribute.
Totally.
And that was sort of unacceptable to me, and still fighting against it. But I'm saddened to see that it's still very much, the norm.
Definitely everywhere, even outside of politics. So hopefully, our children's children will see something much different to what we see, and so we just have to continue this important work that we're doing, and especially you saving so many women's lives and giving them a voice and someone to talk to, someone to lean on. So as we move to close, Diva, we just have two final questions for you. So the penultimate one is, we like to end on a high. And we think we need this more than ever, particularly with tier 4 and tier 5 and tier 20 million, whatever. I feel like that's what we're going to get to.
Lol.
Makes me so sad. But if you had a magic wand and can change the world through the feminist lens, how would you change it and what would you do first?
Okay. I thought it was a really silly answer to this question because I could start ranting again, but I feel like I've done that enough. What I'd say is, have you ever seen that film, I'm Not an Easy Man? It's like a French film. I think it's still on Netflix.
No,
I haven't seen that. I often write down when Diva does these posts on her Instagram, I often write down the films that she says, and they're in like my to watch list. I'm like, I think I put that in my to watch list.
Guys, serious homework, okay? This film just blew my mind. It's like a comedy where this really misogynistic guy who's kind of like a womanizer, he hits his head and he wakes up in a world where sexism is reversed. So the way that women are objectified, he's objectified, and he is horrified to see, like, to be such a sexualized object and to have this basic lack of respect at every moment of his life. And the film is just genius and it's hilarious. So I think if I had a magic wand, what I would do is I would have one day on the planet we would reverse sexism. So just that everyone could see how ridiculous it is. There's this scene where he's like waxing his chest and he's waxing his legs because, you know, that's what's expected in reverse sexism world. And you just kind of get, when you see it like that and you just realize, wow, like sexism is ridiculous. When it's turned around the other way and you see a man doing it, you see how ridiculous it is. And that's what I would do. I would have everybody kind of just realize what we're doing here is ridiculous.
I like that. I think that's a really good, sometimes people have to go through things to understand it. I feel if especially men who've always been privileged all over the world, so it's not even about race, it supersedes that. And I think it would really be good for them to just have a day or an hour or 5 minutes and to see how it feels. And even actually experience childbirth, understand just what women go through. Periods, you know, they don't understand. Yes. They're like, oh my God.
It's if like, men had it's periods, what, they'd have tampons everywhere. Like, it would just be like, yeah.
Every man should have to have a period. That's my magic wand.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, we need to talk to someone. I don't know who we can talk to about making that happen, but we need to find that person, you know, to help us. I'm going to pray on it. divine intervention.
And also, Diva, how can we help you? So we want to, the reason why we do this, we want to platform women and especially incredible women like you who are doing really important things that also help other women. So in terms of, if anything like you want our listeners to know, or is there's any kind of area of your work that they can support? Paris, we talk a lot about solutions, and you've already found a solution to one of them with the sexual harassment helpline. But is there anything else you want us to kind of like shout out or a call to action?
Yeah, I guess the one thing I want, if anyone's listening to this and they want to help, I would go online right now and immediately donate to your local domestic abuse charity, because money is the best form of activism. Donating is honestly the best thing you can do if you feel powerless and you don't know what to do. That is one of the most effective things you can do. So do that, because there are a lot of charities in the sector right now who are in serious trouble. So that's what I'd ask people to do.
Thank you, Diva. That was, I mean, I know I'm definitely going to do that. And I've done a few, but I just need to, put the money where your mouth is, essentially. And I know you've also been, that you did a post about donating to charities instead of buying Christmas presents as well, which I thought was incredible. Paris, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, just thank you so much for your time today, Deba. Yeah. Feel really honoured to have you here and showcasing your work, the important helpline that you've got, because, you know, it is saving people's lives, and there is nothing more important than that in the world. I mean, you know, you're living a very purposeful life, without sounding like a preacher, which I often do. But I think, you know, it's really, really important what you're doing, especially now. So, yeah, we want to continue to support you, work with you whatever way we can. And just, yeah, thank you so much for your time. I've learned a lot. And we're going to have to go back and read more on harassment, what's going on and what it is. And yeah, what's the best course of action.
And I have had the best time talking to you both, and I am forever grateful for what you are doing and the change in the world you're trying to create. Like, I see it, I celebrate it. Carry on being amazing. Like, you guys are so, I'm gonna get all whimsical now, but you guys are so young and you're already like doing so much. Like, just think about what you're gonna have achieved in 10 years time. And it makes me really hopeful for the future. And
so, Deba, you're young too. Come on. You're so young as well. You already know all this.
We're spring chickens.
But yeah, it's amazing. You just started on your journey. So, and it's like, it's good. It's so good. And keep inspiring people and keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll put Deba's details in the show notes so you can follow her on Instagram. She's also quite active on Twitter as well. And we'll put Rights of Women and all the organisations that Deba is leading on and working with. So yeah, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Your high heels in that dress and move.